Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I'm running behind on my videos for various reasons, and one of them is that my landline got knocked out, and I'm trying to get my landline fixed, and I went to the White Squatter camp at Munseyville because apparently there'd been an attack on the whites by blacks. So I went to investigate and I got some first-hand film footage of what I saw and what I discussed there. And the problem was that the resultant video file is really big and I'm battling to sort out the bandwidth and stuff to upload it because my ADSL's been knocked out. But I'm trying to make a plan via a member of my family, so it may come out in the next few days if my arrangements work out. But in the meantime, there's a topic that I've been meaning to touch on for quite some time. I was hearing from people that they were saying that Renegade was doing some strange things, like, for example, the flat earth idea. I've not dug into it, but I've just had a quick squiz over the thing. And people were saying, oh, you know, that's not a good thing to do, and that sort of thing. And I was wondering about it, and then I began to think that the same applies to myself. I've also done some pretty weird things. And when I look at the emails doing the rounds on the white right, I see some extremely bizarre stuff. Now, there are some things, there may even be quite a lot of things, that are pure enemy propaganda, enemy psychological warfare, intended to scare people, intended to mess with people's heads, intended to break people's morale and scare people. I have a feeling a lot of that stuff exists. And there's quite a lot of stuff like that that I'm very suspicious of. But there are other things that have got roots in other thoughts. And when I see how widespread it is, I'm beginning to think that this is maybe just a sign of a natural human reaction to the events of our time. And the events of our time are getting more and more bizarre. So what may be happening to the whites may be something that I could describe as Jew shock. And when you are hit with this Jew shock, it kind of unbalances your mind, because it's something that you're not ready for, and it comes at you from such a strange angle. And when I think to my own younger life, I did some very weird things, and when I look back and I see the path that I took, my path is somewhat similar to what other whites may be going through. The difference is just that when I was young, there weren't many others who were thinking like I was thinking. But now it might actually be quite commonplace among huge chunks of whites who are being hit by what I would call Jew shock. So you may ask me, what do I mean by Jew shock? I would define Jew shock as being the time when you begin to realize that the system, and by the system I mean the whole country, the government, the media, the whole structure, when you begin to realize that this system is not what you were brought up to believe it would be. You were brought up to believe that policemen could be trusted, that government people were trying to do good for the country, and there were rules and regulations, and the president and the elected politicians were doing good, and that the newspapers were telling us the truth, and so forth. And then you begin to realize that actually this is not the case. That 90% of the time or 95% of the time, yes, these things appear to be functioning, but then at very selective moments, these things don't function the way they should. And something very bizarre has gone down. And you can tell that there's something really weird. But you can't quite get to the bottom of it. Lots of people know there's something weird, but nobody really knows the exact answer. And I could give examples like saying the assassination of John F. Kennedy. There have been polls about it, and most people know the official version, the one bullet theory and all that sort of stuff. And they know that there is an official story, but most people don't believe the official story, because once they look into it, they see no way in hell could this be the real explanation. And the same goes for something as shocking as 9/11. In the beginning, you believe the government story, and then when you start digging, you realize, oh my goodness, this thing actually makes no sense whatsoever. We might be able to argue over what is the correct interpretation of this, but the bottom line is that we know that the official story is definitely not true. So those are two incidents where large numbers of people, huge sections of the population, probably even the vast majority of people, completely reject the official government story. The only people still believing in the government story are the government, but everybody else has already moved on, and they know there's something very bizarre. Of course, maybe Americans have been realizing for a lot longer than I give them credit for that things are not right. I remember Joanne Wilcox, who was my first really serious supporter and helper on my website. She was in her 70s, and when she was younger, she'd been a political activist. She'd been involved in politics in America, and she completely wrote the whole thing off. She was a Christian, and she said to me, the whole issue revolves around the Jews. And she said to me, you can vote Republican or you can vote Democrat, but it's actually the same thing. Doesn't matter who you vote for, the end result is not going to be any different. The country is going to go in a completely different direction. So even I've had to joke that, what's the difference between communism, which is a one-party system, and American so-called democracy, which is a two-party system? How different is that really? You know, what's the difference between a monopoly, which is one institution, and an oligopoly, which is two or more? So, you know, maybe there isn't really that much difference. But the interesting part of that is the skepticism about the American system, that there are people who say, look, we're wasting our time. It doesn't matter who we vote for. The voting is not going to result in anything that we actually want. And so the bottom line of this kind of thinking is that you lose faith in the system. And that's the bottom line of Jew shock, is that you lose faith in a structure which you thought was there to serve you. And you believed that this thing worked in this way. And then you discover that this thing works selectively against me. This thing doesn't do what it should do. It works 90% of the time, or even 99% of the time. But then at specific moments, this thing completely breaks down and does something completely different. And so you begin to find yourself wondering whether you should believe what you're being told by your leaders. And people start realizing that newspapers lie and the mass media lies. And that's pretty common nowadays. But 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it wasn't that common at all. Although this perception has been building up for decades in all different parts of the world. And we in Africa are no different. So Jew shock, in my definition, would be the realization that there's somebody pulling strings. There are some invisible strings being pulled behind the scenes. You don't quite know who's pulling them, but what you do know is that it's not working for you as a white person, and it's definitely not working for your country. It's definitely not working for your race, and you can feel that there's something wrong. There's something sneaky going on. And I think that this is affecting people's minds. Now, when it comes to being crazy and doing nutty things, nobody's nuttier than I've been. So no matter what renegade's putting out there, I've done way nuttier things than them. So let me tell you how I became absolute nutty and weird, and how my life was affected by it. And it led me down all sorts of crazy paths. And the thing that bothers me the most about it is to think that maybe there were decades of my life which I wasted in certain things. And that bothers me the most. That maybe I wasted precious time. Not everything is a waste though. Even with some of the weird things I've done, there have been some side effects that came out of my nuttiness that actually taught me certain skills that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And this may be happening to some of you too, though you just don't realize it. So let me give you a little bit of background about my nuttiness and why I went wonky. When I was young, I was pretty homebound. I was not a kid that wanted to just run around and be away. I actually liked to be with my parents. I was pretty much alone. But in the background was this war that was going on in Rhodesia, and as the years went by, we were all concerned about whether there would be a future for us. And we would wonder, you know, what does the future hold? Is this going to work out for us or not? But there were three events that really unsettled me. And the first one happened when I was 15. This was in about 1978. So I don't want to go into the whole story. It's a bit of a bizarre one, but it's something that bothered me a lot. It had to do with the fact that my mother came and picked myself and another white kid up from school. And we lived outside the capital of Rhodesia, which was Salisbury. So it was about a 20-kilometer drive to where we lived. And on the way out to our farm, we drove past a black township. And there were these 80-seater buses that were dropping off blacks, and blacks were crossing the road. And this oldish black woman ran in front of the car. And she did so when we were just a short distance away from her. She suddenly just broke out of the group of people in the middle and she just tried to run across the road. And my mother didn't have time to react and we hit her dead on. And she rolled up on the windscreen and as my mom slammed brakes, she rolled down and fell onto the tar. And she was very badly injured and her head had made a hole in the glass on the driver's side. Anyway, the bottom line is that a black cop arrived and he asked who'd been driving. And the next thing I knew was the black cop was saying to me that there were blacks who said that I'd been driving the car. Now, I was 15 years old and in Rhodesia you could get a driver's license when you were 16. So I was underage, but I hadn't been driving the car. Anyway, this thing went to court and myself and my mom and this other white kid who'd been in the car, we all testified. And the magistrate was a white guy. But here was a black cop and 9 black eyewitnesses. And they all said that they'd seen me getting out of the car and that my mom and I had changed seats and all that. The bottom line is that I was put on trial and there were 3 charges against me. There was driving without a license, there was reckless driving, and the other charge was not assisting the injured. And not assisting the injured was the only charge that I got off on. On the other 2, I was found guilty. And my parents went and they even appealed this. Now, it didn't make headlines in the main newspaper, but it was a small story on one of the pages. And all the kids at school and everybody, they heard about this. But what was bizarre for me is that I was innocent. And here I'd been through the criminal system, and I was actually guilty. and the system had not worked for me at all. Now, this event bothered me a lot. So this happened in 1978. Then in 1979, my dad sold the farm because he was getting old, his health was not good, and we moved into Salisbury. And then in 1980, the country was handed over to the communist Robert Mugabe, which was our worst nightmare. So this was something that bothered everybody. And my brother, who'd been a soldier, he said to the family, "Pack your bags and get the hell out of this country. We can't stay here under a black communist government. We must get the hell out of here." So that happened in about April 1980. Then in November 1980, my father passed away. And in January 1981, I found myself in South Africa and I joined the Navy. So between this court case, the death of my father, and leaving the country and just overnight moving into another country where I was alone and looking after myself, these things were quite a strain on me. And I was not a happy person in a happy space. And I needed things to cling to. And part of what kept me going were my beliefs. So Christianity had never really worked for me. But earlier on, I'd already begun to develop interests in other things and begun to question the whole system and life and what you were told. So I'd already developed an interest in spiritualism, life after death, UFOs, aliens, all those weird topics. I developed an interest in that. And these things, the more I read them, the more skeptical they made me about everything, including science. So when I'd been at school, I'd been in one of the classes for the fast kids, and I'd been a good performer as a fast kid. But instead of going to university, as I should have done, life turned on its head for me, and I also lost an interest in going to university, because I thought to myself, all they're going to do is teach you various things which might not be so. And what are you going to do that for? So at an early age, I developed this interest in what I called the search for the truth. And my search for the truth started with these weird topics. I wanted to know, is there anything more that you can know about them? And so I carried on. And by clinging to some of these things, it helped me to cope. And to add to this, there was one particular author who wrote about all these weird topics, and he did so with a sort of a Buddhist type of viewpoint. His name was Lobsang Rampa. And I became a big fan of this Lobsang Rampa guy. Much later in my life, I realized the guy was a total charlatan and that he'd written a load of garbage. But he was a good author and he could tell a heck of a story and he could tell it really nicely. And he could write it as if he was truly spiritual. So this Lobsang Rampa guy became like my religion. And his views on life and on Buddhism and on life after death and all that sort of stuff, it worked for me. And this guy was actually a very successful author. He ended up writing over 20 books. But they were books that were tainted. They were books that were very cunningly worded. If you know how to do it, you can invent your own religion. And he's not the only one who came up with this kind of stuff. But he was one of the better ones. Anyhow, having all these things to cling to, including prophecies and predictions and things, all these things kind of gave me something to cling to. And when you are struggling and you're not really making money and you're struggling to get your life together and so forth, it helps if you believe that you're doing something good and that you know something special. It helps you to cope and you carry on because you believe that deep down you have something that is useful that's going to give you some kind of edge. Meanwhile, the truth of the matter is that you're actually clutching at straws, and everything that you believe is going to help you is actually not going to help you. It actually makes your life harder. I did all sorts of things. I donated extra money. When Christians were busy tithing, I thought I would do double as much. I would donate twice as much money of my salary to help other people. And I did a whole lot of that right through my life. Until eventually I couldn't afford it anymore and I realized, man, this is crazy. You're impoverishing yourself and you're not helping yourself. But you're giving away money to all sorts of causes and you don't even know if those causes are worth it. But one of the most critical things that helped me to cling to my life was prophecy, because there were certain prophecies that he made that seemed as though they were credible. And a lot of it revolved around 1999. And so as the years went by, this 1999 thing started looming ahead of me. And I started taking this thing seriously. And in my own belief system, something big could be happening. And this led to even newer kinds of madness that I engaged in. In fact, I'm feeling quite embarrassed to have to tell you how insane I was. So I'm going to hold back a bit on my own insanity because I feel a bit bad about it. But the truth is that there were things that I believed, and I thought that if you believe these things and your soul is pure and you do these things and you demonstrate your willingness to believe, that this is going to show some great entity out there that you are worthy of these things. And of course, meanwhile, you're just making an idiot of yourself. But as nutty as I was, at the end of the day, my search was genuine. I really wanted to know if I could prove something to myself. And I was really quite genuine in all of this. In the case of those prophecies, I kept saying to myself that all I'm interested in is if these things can come true and do come true. Because if they don't come true, I'm not interested in this. And of course, those years came and went, and none of those prophecies took place. And then I had to sit back and look and say, was this now right, or have I believed in a load of junk? Another of my interests related to these prophecies, because it was two areas that really interested me. The one was prophecy, because I wanted to have an idea of what's coming, because no matter how bad it was, I was intent on trying to survive. I will tell you that my intention all along was to survive no matter what, and I was willing to try and survive anything. The prophecies that bothered me the most were things like worldwide nuclear war and World War III and those sorts of things. And in my mind, I was quite resolved that no matter what came, I'm determined to survive this. No matter what I have to do, I'm going to try. I'm not going to quit. I'm going down fighting or running, but in one way, by hook or by crook, I intend to come through this. So my madness was still survival-based, and prophecy was now one of the driving forces. But linked to this was a bunch of ideas about people living underground and the hollow earth. And that fascinated me. And since astronomy had fascinated me, I started digging into this. One of my close American friends, who himself exhibited his own kinds of madness, and he still does, because he lives and is focused only on one thing, and that's nuclear war. That's all he lives for and all he thinks about. And it's all he's thought about for the last 30 years. Now me, I've at least gone beyond that now. But he still believes in it and he still carries on madly with this. But he told me that he'd also dug into the hollow earth, but unlike me, the hollow earth didn't grab him. But for me, it became my most important cause. And I wanted to know, if this place exists, how the hell do you get there? And I was serious about this. I wanted to know how to get there. And I wanted to know exactly where it is. And can I walk there or can I fly there? What am I going to do? So those were the kinds of madness that I was involved in. But because I did not believe in the system, I didn't care what scientists and other people told me, because I wanted to reach a point where I could come to a conclusion by myself. I would dig until I'm satisfied that this is or is not so. So, of course, for many other people who would look at me, they'd say, oh God, you're insane. You don't want to listen to anybody else. You carry on with your madness. And eventually, you come and admit that you are wrong. And, of course, that is in the end what I had to admit to myself. That my madness was indeed madness. And my madness had spanned 20 years of my life at least. If not a bit longer even. However, eventually by myself I came to realize, well, I'm wrong about this, I'm wrong about that, I'm wrong about that. My great spiritual guru is a fake and a liar. And he was making up stories that were just so cunningly made up that you just couldn't tell that they were lies. If I'd been more skeptical and less, let's say, open-minded, I'd have arrived at the truth faster. If I'd listened to other people, I'd have arrived at the truth faster. But I was determined that I wanted to know until I was completely satisfied. And when I reached the point where I started discarding the one thing and discarding the other thing, I then had to look at my life and sort of reconstruct my entire belief system. What exactly am I going to believe in now? Because all the things that I have believed in and all the things that kept me going and that gave me hope, all of them have fallen down on the ground. And that in itself is a bit of a shocking thing. But the key thing is that my madness was driven by what I could prove. And it started like that, and I was determined to continue like that. So in the early stages of this, if I read something in the newspaper or I was suspicious about something and things didn't seem right, it would help if I ran into somebody and then this guy would tell me, you know, I was doing this or I was in that position and I saw this and saw that. And the fact that I now knew someone personally who had some experience relating to this topic, it would either help me to believe more in it or believe less in it. And in this way, over a long period of time, step by step, tedious, slow, misdirected, step by insane step, I did manage to regain some kind of sanity in my life. And keep in mind that when I was a kid, my brother was a soldier. Now, my brother is much older than I am. And my brother would spend up to 6 months of the year in the army, and he'd come and he'd tell me things that he'd learned and courses he'd been on and things they'd been told. And a lot of those things that my brother told me turned out to be very true and very useful, because he explained to me how the communists operate, how there are these people sneaking around, they're trying to take over the education system, they're busy trying to take over universities. He was telling me these things long before I'd ever heard of names like Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, communist products from those same universities. But there are many others who came out of these universities. Stacks of them, lots of blacks, and all these people who are famous now, they were brought up on communism. So there were things that I'd been told that had been true and were proven to be true, and they are true if you go back and you look at history. However, there were many things that I was deeply suspicious about, and some of them for no real reason. And later on, I could not really prove that there was anything that was a problem there. But I was naturally extremely skeptical and suspicious about everything in the system. And that wasn't all bad, because there were things that I did learn from that, and like I say, that are valid. that if you go and you dig into them, they are valid. But there is also the whole bunch of things that I went and believed were true, which actually weren't true. So it is a kind of a strange way to live your life and to operate, because you don't trust the system at all, and you're skeptical about everything and everybody. And so that is the angle from which I arrived at this. It was this utter skepticism that started in my youth and that left me absolutely, utterly skeptical about everything that I came across, except the Jews. Can you believe? Except the Jews. But for me, the key was to arrive at some kind of truth, some kind of truth that I felt meant something. And as the years went by, I got more mature and I learned other things. And there were things in my days of madness where I did learn all sorts of things that became useful. Some of you who've watched my video, How America Built UFOs, you'll see that there were quite a few things that I learned from some of my madness. But me in Africa, having this view that the world is so weird, because I'm seeing how the world is supporting the blacks, and everybody is anti-white. They were anti the whites in Rhodesia, they were anti the Boers. And to me, it was as if something was very wrong with the world. And now, of course, we understand why, and we understand that the Jews have been busy with their anti-white agenda around the world for decades. In fact, it's been going on for probably more than 100 years. But now this thing has reached a new point. And that new point is that people in America and people in Europe who had been more comfortable with the system, they have begun to realize that there are things that are very wrong, and they've become more skeptical. And I think the assassination of John F. Kennedy is one such incident. But I think the incident that's been the biggest in terms of propelling vast numbers of people away from the mass media and away from all the institutions and organizations has been 9/11. Because 9/11 has caused literally World War III. You could almost say that we are in World War III. There's been so much war that's been going on since 9/11 that I really think we could call it World War III. It might not look like World War III, but it is actually World War III. And it's far from over. But I think that this general skepticism that has started hitting people in America in large numbers and also in Europe, I think that these things are now putting a lot of you in the same kind of situation that I was in when I was a kid. And it's unhinging people, because people are saying, we really believed in our system, and truly this thing is not working the way that we've been told it works, and there is something going on. And of course it's these Jews who are tunneling through the system, and the Jews pulling all these strings behind the scenes, and the Jews organizing things and hiding things and lying about things. And of course, who produces more lies than anything Jew-related? The Jews are the greatest liars in history, and I've done videos on that. If you go and look at my Jews 102, the Jewish strategy of lying, and also the Great Jewish Mask, and I want to finish part 4 of that shortly. But all these things, all these lies, all these things intended to mess with our heads, these things are messing with our heads, and these things are affecting people. And now people are realizing, hold on, just because something comes from the government or the mass media or even the university doesn't mean it's true. Look at how the universities lie about race, lie about whites, and even all the data and concepts that they've fiddled. American history has been misrepresented in the same way that our history was misrepresented. But now I think we are in a situation where, thanks to the internet, a lot of people are being struck with this Jew shock. And this Jew shock is making them disconnect from the system. And they are mentally disconnecting from the system. They're saying, Hold on, can I trust a guy just because he's a professor? Can I trust a guy just because he's the president? Or even the commander of the army or whoever's in charge of the police? You know, who can I trust? And these trust levels are being broken down. And we whites, we are a people who operate in a high trust environment. And I'll tell you, I picked that up the other day from somebody on the social media who was comparing whites with blacks. And they were saying that we are operating in a high trust environment, whereas these blacks and others are operating in a low trust environment. And I can tell you that here in South Africa, I've seen this. I assure you that all these non-whites operate on much lower levels of trust than white people do. They are more skeptical about each other because they tell more lies among themselves. But the key thing is that it's white people that are in large numbers becoming skeptical about lots of things. And I think that this is a sign that they are mentally disconnecting from the system. And of course, there have been people who have for years been getting away from TV and newspapers. I pride myself if I go a whole year and I don't buy a single newspaper. I do my absolute utmost to go and not buy a single newspaper or a single magazine in an entire year. I do that and I'm doing it quite well these days. I source all my information via the internet and I stopped watching TV, normal TV, more than 10 years ago. Nowadays, my TV is whatever I want it to be. I download stuff off the internet and that's my TV. Nobody is going to tell me what to watch. I avoid all the things that I am not interested in, and I don't care about all that mind control that's going on. Ditto for the mass media, ditto for the speeches of the president. Somebody asked me the other day, oh, didn't you watch the State of the Nation? No, I don't watch the State of the Nation address by the president, because I know he's talking absolute nonsense. He's talking garbage. I don't listen to most of what he says. He's talking absolute claptrap. And that's how it's been for the last 20 years. I don't even listen to them. So there's a lot more people out there who have realized that something is wrong. And I think there are large numbers of people who by their own beliefs and using their own minds alone, they're trying to piece together and they're engaging in a search for the truth in the same way that I conducted my search for the truth. And some of it may appear very nutty to you, and you may look at these people and laugh at them, but I think that you'll find that almost all of them are quite serious about the business, and that with time, they will mature. Now take a concept like the flat earth. I was looking at this thing, I've not bothered to do much reading on it, but just the bit that I browsed over it, I could see what the angle of this was about. It's all about what can I prove to myself using my senses and what I know. And to me, the concept of the flat earth is a perfect example of people who are in a state of shock and they only want to trust that which they can verify for themselves. So if they can't perceive anything bigger than that, then that's where their sort of boundary is. And that is exactly the type of space that I was in. I also didn't want to move into arenas and things that I couldn't prove. But in my case, when I'd been young, I had a tremendous interest in astronomy. And I did lots and lots of reading about it, and I had my little telescope, and I spent nights out at looking for planets and watching the stars and all sorts of things. I even have a little file with some of my astronomical drawings when I was a kid. So I had a little 3-inch telescope. Nowadays, they just go and they buy a telescope and it's computer controlled and it can do all sorts of things that I could never even have dreamed of. But anyhow, when I was younger, I was busy with my binoculars and my little telescope and I was trying to figure things out. So when I see people believing in strange things and thinking strange thoughts, I don't laugh at them because I know what I was like. And there were many people who laughed at me, and I didn't like being laughed at. I was, as insane as I was serious. So I can understand why people are going through all these things. And you can see even in religion, even in Christianity, there are all kinds of big movements going on as people are starting to rethink many things. Because now there are people who've realized that Christianity is anti-white. So now more and more whites can see that the entire global system is anti-white. And this is a shocking thing. And to realize that even the very people that you vote for who are ruling you might be out to destroy you. These are not things that people feel comfortable with. And I think that we're seeing a lot of movement, a lot of intellectual movement coming out of this Jew shock. And out of this is going to come a lot of things. It might even be that we are busy in the midst of an enormous change. It may even be that starting with Adolf Hitler and the Germans, that we are busy on an enormous change that is going to take the white race in a totally different direction. It may be that for the first time in 2,000 years, white people are going to take a sharp turn. We're going to take a 90-degree turn, and we're going to head off into a whole new direction. We might even turn 180 degrees and head back to some of what we used to be. So it could be that enormous things are actually busy happening, and they're all happening quietly in white people's minds. So I don't sit and judge people. I say, let people do their thing. Let people try and find the truth. Let people explore and try to do things, because the one thing that I also did discover by pure accident is that as insane as the things were that I did, that there were benefits that did come from it. And some of those benefits were quite astounding. For example, by engaging in some of the madness that I engaged in, it allowed me to do things that I would not have been able to do otherwise. If it wasn't for me and my hollow earth, I would never have gone and looked for radio shows and tried to get my message out to people. I wouldn't have known how to do it. And if I had tried to do something racial back then, in the conditions in which we were in South Africa, I would have run into serious trouble. But by doing something that was nutty, I wasn't going to end up in jail. Nobody was going to put me in jail because I believed in the hollow earth. But if I walked around preaching about Adolf Hitler 20 years ago, I might have been in much bigger trouble. If I tried to do back then what I'm doing now, I think I would have been in a lot more trouble. And then some of this nuttiness had other benefits. For example, when I went and did all this hollow earth stuff and I appeared on radio shows like Jeff Renz's show. Shortly after that, in Zimbabwe, the whole conflict between the whites and the blacks broke out, and you had the farm invasions and the killing of farmers and most of the farmers being driven off their land and all sorts of intimidation and violence and political unrest. Now, when those things started in 2000, 2001, my nuttiness had allowed me to establish some sort of internet connections and radio connections. So then what I did was I used my nutty connections to get a real message out that was then useful. So then I started sending out political messages, and those political messages were of use to people. But if I hadn't done nutty things, I wouldn't have had those doors open already. And I learned other skills out of my nuttiness. My nuttiness taught me all sorts of things, among them a couple of skills about how to deal with people and how to debate with people, because I was trying to sell things and trying to convince people. And I needed to have some method of trying to do that. So even though I was trying to sell a nutty product and a nutty concept, I was learning skills about how to deal with people. And those skills came back to help me. So it wasn't all a loss. And I have definitely found one thing in my life. No matter what I've done, if I have put a lot of energy into something to try and do a specific thing, whether it is at work or whether it was trying to make money or whether it was trying to do any of these nutty projects of mine, the one thing that is true is that every time I've put a lot of energy into something, I might not have succeeded at the thing that I was trying to succeed at. I never achieved the kind of success that I hoped I could achieve. But every time I did learn some kind of skill that I would never have learned otherwise, ever, there was always some sort of side effect that came out of it that I could never have predicted, that I could never have been aware of. And that side effect did have a useful real-world value for me. And some of these side lessons that I learned in the various things I did have come in handy as I have moved into more serious terrain. So there are things that have definitely come out of it. And if you had to ask me, you know, which is better? Should people be believing the system or should people be mentally and spiritually disconnecting from the system? There's no question about it. My answer is you must mentally and spiritually disconnect from the system. You need to head out into a new direction. We whites, we are dying, and we are going to be destroyed. And the only way out is to start finding ways to break out, and you must start unchaining yourself from the system. So this unchaining is excellent, and I don't care how nutty it looks, I don't care how weird it is, I say go for it. Any white who wants to think up a new idea, as long as at heart he's not dishonest with himself, and he's not setting out to be dishonest to other people, as long as he's really genuine in his search, I really have no problem. Because if you look at all kinds of religion in many ways are just different levels of madness. But if that madness is helping to hold you together, and you are able to get up and to do work, and you are still willing to struggle and fight forward in life, then let it be so. If this gives you some strength to carry on, then that's fine. The only thing that I'm truly against is suicide. I will tell whites, never kill yourself. Never let anybody commit suicide. We mustn't encourage an attitude of suicide among whites at all. And any white who thinks in that way, you must try and talk them out of it. The only time that you might let it go is if somebody is truly on their deathbed and they're in great pain and there is nothing more to be gained from life and they will be dying. Then, yes, things like suicide and euthanasia and those things are valid alternatives if those people believe in them. But otherwise, everybody must do their utmost to fight forward and to struggle forward. Life is a struggle. And we're going to come back to this topic because this was a big thing that our Emperor Adolf Hitler spoke about. He spoke a lot about life being a struggle. And it's an eternal struggle. And it's something that we have no control over. There is just something about the way life is that this is how it is. And it may just be a very natural thing. It's just the result of competition. And as we go into other deeper things, we'll come back to these topics and look at them a bit more closely. But life is a struggle. And this is the way it is. I used to be so interested in spiritual things. I was trying to be a monk. I wanted to sit in a cave and try and get my spirit to leave my body and to travel across the universe. And I didn't want anything to do with all these material things. Now I'm much older, and like I've said before, I've realized that instead of sitting and reading a book and reading all these spiritual things and thinking these spiritual thoughts, I'm starting to think what I really should be doing is taking a gun and blowing someone's brains out, because now I'm a bit older and I've started seeing who are the troublemaking nuisances and who are the enemies who are making life unbearable for others. So now I've kind of taken my spiritual stuff and I've thrown it aside and I'm hauling out the sword. And I'm thinking that this has definitely got a valid place in our existence. After having filled my mind with so many of these spiritual concepts, I must tell you, it is still something of a mystery to me. And deep down in me, there is still a part of me that sort of asks the question, you know, what is this all about? Because despite everything that we know, and I do take science seriously, and I'm very interested in astronomy and interstellar space and the things that we know about all these other planets that we've found, I still am quite awed by the fact that we've not found another planet exactly like Earth. We've found sort of Earth-like planets, but we have no idea how far away we'd have to go before we find another planet that's got as much intelligent life on it as ourselves. And no matter what is wrong with this place, this planet Earth is special. And it really is very special. It is truly special. And if you look at science and everything we know, you'll see this is very special. And our place here is very special. And I find it unthinkable and utterly illogical that we should give up anything here. I think it is a sin, even in the physical, material sense. It is an absolute sin. We would not be living our lives in accordance with nature if we whites gave up. I think it is absolutely unthinkable that we should give up, surrender, commit suicide, or even give up one grain of sand. I'm absolutely convinced of this. And I'm not talking in just a pure spiritual sense. I'm talking in the material, scientific sense. We are the highest form of life that we have ever discovered. We've not come across anything that comes even close to ourselves. For that reason alone, we should preserve ourselves at all costs. And we white people, we are the ones who've built all this science and who've acquired all this knowledge. And even the amount of knowledge which we've acquired, we can look back and see the mistakes that we made in the past. We could have done better than this. There has been the discussion among some of us that Christianity slowed us down and lost us 1,000 years of our progress. But let's not delve too much into that now. The bottom line is that mistakes and all, regardless of what we are, warts and all, we must cling to and fight tooth and nail for absolutely everything we have. And we white people must stop running, hiding, surrendering, etc. We must do whatever is necessary for each of us to find himself again and to revive his own personal spirit and his will to survive. And it must be a will to survive at all costs, no matter what. Today, a family member of mine, who'd been a soldier earlier in his life and who'd actually enjoyed his time in the South African military, he was saying to me that he's watching his son, who's now 19, and he was saying that he's looking at his son and wondering if he should get his son out of South Africa. And he said, you know, where are we going to go to? And I said to him that really, my personal view is that we whites must stop running. We must stop running. This is not our nature. Don't be like the Jews. The Jews are not the people who built civilization. We are the people who built civilization. And the way we worked is the way we must carry on working. And it is us who must decide how things should be done. And we are not a race of people who ran away and hid. We were a bunch of people who could fight and who could build and who could build constructively on the things that we gained. And we must not lose that will at all. And all this madness is quite fine. It's quite acceptable because I think it's a sign that this old system that we've been using for the last 2,000 years, I think this old system is a junk system and it started to outlive its lifetime. And this system is now becoming a threat to our race who created this civilization. And for our race, we shouldn't tolerate this for one second. We, as the creators of the greatest civilization this planet has ever known, we should fight tooth and nail and work with each other and in support of each other no matter where. And I said to my family member, no white person anywhere on this planet should run. None of us should run. Even as outnumbered as we are in Africa, we should not run. We should fight tooth and nail for everything. Fight tooth and nail all the way. And encourage all our fellow whites everywhere to just knuckle down and fight for everything. Don't give up anything. Don't listen to the enemy. And disconnect from the damn system. Disconnect because I think that now with the internet, we are creating something new. And I think we are in the process. Out of all of this madness and all of this thinking that's going on, something incredible is going to be created out of this. And I want to tell you a little story about a Boer that I worked with long ago. In about 1986, 1987, I worked with this Boer guy who was one of the brightest guys I ever worked with. And at the time, he was also amazingly successful in software. So when I was a young guy and I was getting into software and working in a corporate environment, I met this guy, and this guy was quite a boffin, and I liked this guy. This was a Boer guy, but he was a Boer guy with a mind of his own, completely different to the others. Now, this guy had his own Porsche, and in those days, before cell phones, he had a car telephone. So he could drive in his red Porsche, and he could make phone calls, and of course, he was doing what he could with the girls, and he was having a lot of fun, and he had a lot of money. This guy had a business, and he wasn't a manager. So what he did was he had all these software people whom he was hiring out, and he had no interest in managing people. He just hired a secretary, and she took care of everything else, and she would take care of the admin, and he was making a whole ton of money out of these people that he was hiring out. And then he bought himself a block of flats and he invested in that. And as if that wasn't lucky enough, an uncle of his died and he inherited a coal mine. So this guy was quite loaded. And he told me that he thought the best way to live life would be to lie on the beach every day and drink beer. And he said to me that he'd done that for 6 months. He'd spent 6 months on the beach drinking beer, and now he was bored. And he decided that he needed to go and work. So he was working not because he needed to work, but because he wanted to work and because he realized it was healthy. Anyway, this guy was a boffin in assembler on IBM mainframes, and he made good money. And this guy told me an interesting thing the one day. He said to me that people can't be convinced of new things if their minds are already made up. He said that if your mind is made up, nothing that anyone else can say to you is going to change your mind. You are only going to change it very rarely once it's made up. But he said that in a person's lifetime, there comes a time when for a short period of time, your mind goes open. Something happens and your mind is open for a period of time. And during that time, you can be influenced to change. And if you can catch a person at the time when his mind is open and you can influence him with ideas, then you may well be able to change his life and change his direction in life. So I never forgot what this Andre guy said all those years ago, because it's now probably about 30 years ago that he told me this. And it's very true. So if we go back to this business of whites disconnecting mentally and spiritually from the system, and whites starting to look around, and maybe they're feeling lost, but now their minds are open. And while their minds are open, they are busy looking for new things to latch onto. And this is the perfect time to start giving them new information which will set them on a new course. And I think that this is what is happening to enormous numbers of us. And of course, you must remember too that the main force in life comes from the people at the bottom. Don't be fooled about the people at the bottom and the people at the top. Those of you who watched my video, The Two Emperors of the White Race, you would have had your first introduction to Napoleon and Hitler as emperors of the white race. And you would know why I say that. Now, both Napoleon and Hitler were men who came from the bottom. Now, both of those men were exceptionally popular among the white masses. And Napoleon even has a quote where he talks about how you can change the world. And he says that there are two ways. The one way is to connive with the people at the top, which is what the Jews are doing. And Napoleon says to you that this results in mediocre results. But if you go and you drive the change from the bottom, that is where the truly radical change comes from. So you must never lose sight of the power of the white masses. Everybody's forgetting the white masses, but the white masses have got real power. And I'll tell you something else. This comes from the White Man's Bible from Ben Klassen, who I like to think of as the Pope of the white race, because that's what he kind of called himself, and I quite enjoy that title. He called himself something like Pontifex Maximus, which is the Pope. And what Ben Klassen said is the following. He said that if all white people worked together, we would be 10 times stronger than all the people of all the other races put together. So I'm going to leave you with those thoughts from Ben Klassen and from Napoleon, because we'll come back and we'll study some of the thoughts of these people. So don't concern yourself too much if you see a little bit of madness happening among whites. It's all good. And as long as we keep talking to each other and having dialogue with each other, it's only going to be good. And the real thing to remember is don't worry too much about whether people believe in flat earth or hollow earth or whatever the heck they're thinking about. The important thing is that their minds are open and they are disconnecting from the Jew system. And this is the really important thing. Because once we settle down and we have found ourselves, we are going to create a whole new force. And you're going to see, we are going to tear apart those who thought that we, the white people, are dead. They're going to see we are far from dead. So that's it for today. That's a bit of madness from me, and I hope it gives you some food for thought. We'll be chatting again soon. Have a good day.